You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. This week, we're checking in with some journalists around the world to learn more about the effect coronavirus has had on people globally. And the reporters we're talking to, well, they have something in common. They are or were affiliated with KALW. Yesterday, we heard from Emma Nobel, a reporter in Australia. Today, we go to India to hear from Sandeep Roy, longtime KALW journalist and author who lives in Kolkata, India. As of today, the country reports a little over 4,000 cases. I talked to him on Skype to ask how Indians are coping.
So I'm in Kolkata at my mother's home, actually, and Kolkata, along with the rest of India, is in a corona lockdown. It has been since about the last week of March. It was supposed to. Actually, Kolkata went into lockdown before the rest of India did. So we are getting a few extra days of it. As of now, the lockdown is supposed to continue at least till the middle of April, till April 14th. But it is unclear as of yet as to whether it'll be lifted or there'll be sort of a staggered exit from lockdown. I mean, that is the million rupee question as to what happens in the middle of April. But as of now, it's very surreal to be in a city of millions like Kolkata, which is always just bustling with noise. You know, even at late at night, you can hear cars honking all the time. And now that city has just fallen very eerily quiet. Streets are empty. Only some food shops and grocery stores are open. Other than that, everything else is deemed as non-essential and shuttered.
That sounds a lot like here. And you mentioned Kolkata shut down earlier than the rest of the country, kind of also like the Bay Area and California. What was the reason there? Was it just the authorities in Kolkata saw it, you know, earlier than everybody else, or what? How did it go down?
I think what happened in Kolkata was that a couple of cases of people who had returned from abroad and were detected as positive for the coronavirus. And in a couple of those cases, the first case that was actually detected in Kolkata was of a young man from here who had gone to London, and he had spent time with people who were positive for corona. But when he came back, he had refused to go into the government infectious diseases center, even though he had a slight fever. And he'd sort of held off until the tests had come back that he was indeed positive, by which time people were panicking that he had actually possibly infected a lot of people around him. And so that caused an enormous hullabaloo here, because his mother was actually a highly positioned bureaucrat in the government. So people were worried that people in the highest levels of government had been exposed to corona. Mm. And so as a result of that, I think people started taking some precautionary measures. And also, you know, in a country as densely populated as India, and in a city as densely populated as Kolkata, you know, people felt like they couldn't really take chances, because we just don't have that kind of healthcare infrastructure to deal with a pandemic in full-blown pandemic form. So people tried to institute, in fact, more measures than many cities in America did, you know, temperature checks at the airport and a lot of things, which friends of mine returning at that time to cities in America said they didn't face any of that at the airports in America.
And that's something a lot of people are talking about. I know when I call back home to Sudan, one of the things is the embassy is organizing these flights for American citizens to leave back to the United States. And the kind of the running joke is, we don't want to go back to the United States with everything that we're hearing about the shortages of the respirators and the lack of testing. We're quite fine here, thank you very much, kind of thing. I'm wondering if you're hearing, you know, the same kind of sentiment from where you are, in terms of, you know, all of this news coming out of the superpower, the United States, that is not coping with this really well.
Absolutely. In fact, I was just reading about similar evacuation flights happening for Americans from India. And somebody who was boarding this flight was in fact told by the authorities that, you know, at the airports in America, you're not going to have these kinds of checks that are happening at Indian airports for body temperature scanning and all of that. And there is a risk that you might be exposed to corona infection on the flight itself because, you know, we can't take any guarantees. So, you know, are you really sure that you want to not just stay where you are and shelter in place, as it were, and come to America? And in this case, the person said they actually did not really want to go, but they had old elderly parents living in America, and so they felt like they needed to go and be with their parents, which right. is quite a turnaround from the usual immigrant story where the elderly parents would be sitting in India and you know, their children would be coming from America to look after them.
Right. And also another twist on the immigrant story is a chance to go to the U.S. and you don't want to go to the U.S. You would rather stay where you are. That's very interesting.
And absolutely, because as you know, in India for the longest time, like ever since I remember, to be foreign returned, which either meant London or America in people's cases, was sort of a mark of cachet and prestige. You know, this was something that gave you bragging rights within the community. Now, foreign returned is actually a mark of suspicion. People don't want to admit to having come from London or America. People who have come back from abroad are hiding their itineraries and pretending they hadn't been to somewhere like America or Europe.
I want to ask you about this also. I call back home and, you know, it sounds like people where you are taking this very seriously. And I want to gauge that because I call back home and it's like so-and-so's wedding is happening and it's still happening. So-and-so died and we're still going to the funeral with everybody else. And, you know, there's this feeling of, there's these social responsibilities that are going to happen no matter what. I don't know if you're seeing that as well, or are people pretty much in line with what they need to be doing?
Well, it's mixed, Hannah. In a sense, you know, this, a country like India, much like Sudan, is a country built on social connections. So social distancing is something very alien for a country built on social connections.
Right.
People are always looking, but people are taking it seriously in some ways. For example, somebody in our neighborhood died very recently. And so my sister sort of put a mask on and went to pay the social condolence call. But it was unlike any other social condolence call that I've ever seen, which is my sister stood on the street, this woman appeared on the balcony of her house, and they exchanged condolences from street to house without anybody actually physically being in a room together. But having said that,
as opposed to normally what would happen?
As opposed to normally, you would go to someone's house, you would sit down with them in the room, you know, you would commiserate with them, spend time with them, you'd have a funeral with all the family members and extended family members present. In this case, the lady's son, who lives in a different city in India, is going to be unable to come for his mother's funeral. Mm. And they're just going to deal with that in that way. You know, his daughter will do some kind of a ritual, but the other children are just not going to be able to come because there are no flights, no trains running at this moment. But at the same time, there are a lot of people who have not been taking it seriously. For example, just this week, the Indian Prime Minister decided that as a sort of show of solidarity, you know, for the nation rallying together, at 9 o'clock on Sunday night, for 9 minutes, he asked Indians to turn off their lights and light candles and lamps as a sort of flickering show of solidarity for everybody affected by this crisis, to show we're not alone and in it together. But many of his more fervent supporters took that as a sign for some kind of party. And when I was up in the roof at 9 o'clock, I could hear people hollering and whooping. People were setting off fireworks. And then people just decided this was the time to take a candlelight procession out onto the street. So they suddenly, social distancing be damned. people were out on the street marching with candles, and some politicians even decided to take flaming torches and march with dozens of people shouting, "Go Corona, go."
That sounds like it turned into something totally different. But I wanted to ask you, we saw images of people in big cities trying to crowd on the trains to go back home. And how is the government handling these, you know, large numbers of people moving around, trying to get to their families and shelter in place with them? What does that look like on the inside?
Actually, I think the migrant issue that you're talking about was one of the great sort of failures in implementing the lockdown. Now, it is a given that trying to lock down a country of 1.3 billion people is never going to be easy. It is always going to be very difficult. But it seemed like the powers that be, governments, had forgotten that there were millions of migrants who live in parts of, in cities of India, while their homes are in villages far away. And these people were really given no notice at all that the country was going to shut down, that trains were going to shut down. Trains are the lifeline of India. They have never been shut down. And so suddenly these people were stranded with no way to get home because there were no buses, no trains. State borders had been sealed. And this was a great blind spot in a way, because international immigrants had been given a chance where they had been told international flights will stop on such and such date. So they had a few days to book a flight to get out of India or to get back into India to be with their families. But it seemed like people forgot there was another kind of migrant in India too, actually more numerous in number than the international immigrant who is in Silicon Valley or New York or Dubai. And they forgot about these people. It almost felt like that. And suddenly these people were crowding highways and literally walking across the breadth of India trying to get home. And it is worth remembering that they were being moved by exactly the very same sentiment that moved someone from Mumbai flying to California to be with their parents, or someone from San Francisco flying to Kolkata to be with her parents, a need to go home at a time of crisis. It is the same human impulse. And added to that, these migrants actually had very few other options, because they're mostly day laborers working in things like construction jobs. So as soon as everything shut down, they lost their daily wages. Without their daily wages, they could no longer afford to stay in cities like Mumbai and Delhi. So they wanted to go back to the village where at least they still had a home where they could stay in. And unlike the US, your social security benefits like rations and things are tied to the place you're from, not in the place where you're working. And so it was a very natural urge to go back home where you would at least get food and shelter. But it is very difficult. I mean, these are very crowded. I mean, people will often say in India that social distancing is something that the upper middle class talk about in their apartments. When there are six people living to a room in a village, you know, social distancing is a luxury. And some of the migrants, there were pictures of migrants who had come back from the city and had nowhere to self-quarantine. And so they were self-quarantining themselves on top of trees. But now the situation had gone to the court, and the Supreme Court said, you know, this was a huge travesty, and the government has finally said that migrants who were not able to get home have been provided with shelters in the cities that they're in. They're trying to institute measures for their food and basic needs. But it would have been much more humane if all of these measures had been put into place before the shutdown had happened, instead of after the fact.
Mm-hmm. What are you working on right now? What stories are around you that you're curious about?
I mean, for me, it is like everybody else. It is trying to just make sense of this very surreal, strange new world that we are living in, and trying to sort of find your bearings in that world. You know, I just recently wrote a column which addressed some of the stuff we were just talking about how labels like foreign returned have suddenly lost their luster in a place like India, where it become a badge of suspicion rather than a badge of honor. And you know, on a lighter vein, I'm also looking at at some of the how people are trying to deal with this quarantine in this world of social media, where suddenly they find nothing much to do except make Dalgona coffee, or is it Daglona coffee? I can never remember. But I think the larger issues that have come up again and again is that in some ways, what Corona has done is that it's leveled the playing field for so many of us around the world, where somebody sitting in San Francisco and somebody sitting in Kolkata are thinking finally about the same things. They don't feel worlds apart as they used to at one time. We're worrying about the same things, about respirators, about nurses and doctors getting infected, about, you know, aging parents who might be exposed to the virus. We're worrying about the same thing. But at the same time, I think in a place like India, it has also shown in really stark relief the gap between the haves and the have-nots.
Mm. I'm finding that a lot of us have, you know, there's this inclination for journalists to seek a lighter side and to, like, report on things that might seem frivolous or trivial just for mental relief and for sanity. Like, I'm hearing that a lot.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I've seen stories here, for example, you know, Bengal, like today's big story was that Bengal has, you know, Bengal is well known for its sweet. It's a place with a major sweet tooth. Mm. And so the sweet shops have been given permission to open for about 4 hours every day right now, because I guess they thought it was be otherwise it might be some kind of emergency. But then one sweet shop has come up with basically a Corona sweet, and it's a really disgusting looking red thing shaped like a Corona made out of milk and sugar, and like a ball with red, and for the life of me, I don't know why anybody, it really looks really disgusting. I don't know why anybody would want to eat a sweet named after a virus, but at the same time, that has been the hottest topic among my friends today, where everybody's, I think there's a palpable sense of relief at being able to talk about something other than, you know, death tolls and doomsday scenarios.
Sandeep Roy is a longtime KALW host and reporter. You can hear his mini show called Dispatch from Kolkata. That's Wednesdays at 7:30 a.m. and 4:45 p.m. right here on KALW. And you can hear the rest of my interview with him at KALW.org.